Happy Friday, everybody. I wanted to move away from the gospel and just give a few thoughts, let you know what we're doing at Holy Cross and some of my thoughts for us to keep in mind as we plan for being able to get back to Mass soon. So as everybody knows, in North Carolina, we've moved into stage one, working with some great people at the parish in order to prepare to move to phase two. Our hopes is that we'll have a certain percentage of number of people allowed in the church. So that would be planning to have the right number of volunteers. Remember, some of our volunteers are older, and they might say, like, we don't want to get back right yet. And so we're just kind of waiting to see where we're going to have to fill in some of those gaps. It's going to require some more volunteers as well in order to get people in and out of the church properly and be able to seat people properly as well. We're probably going to go more towards a ticketing situation, so we'll have more masses available on the weekend, I think is what we're looking at, and you would be able to go on and sign up for the mass time that you want to go to. So we'd have three masses on Saturday afternoon and evening, three masses on Sunday, probably the normal parish schedule. But that allows us to limit the number of people. You would go online, it's a free system, you would just register for your tickets for you and your family, and you would come to the door either on your mobile device or printing them off at home in order to come to Mass. Some people have said, what if we're not able to use these devices? What if we're not really good with the computer? Somebody said, what about our older parishioners? And I said, if you can't use a ticketing system, you're in an at-risk group. No, but the reality is that there will be limitations no matter how we do it. One thing that somebody suggested is, well, why isn't it first come, first serve? Well, then we're going to have people lined up, down the street, always six feet away from the people in front and behind you. So there's going to be some limitations. There's going to be some struggles. There's no perfect way to do it at this point. So we're looking at the best avenues forward. We'll also be practicing social distancing and the like within the church. I've received a lot of emails regarding the news this week coming from Forsyth in Guilford County, especially concerning the spike in new cases, right? So we had, I think it was Wednesday, so 2 days ago, the highest number of cases reported in one day came from Forsyth County. And then the same thing happened yesterday. It was an even greater number. The way that the health department is looking at this is they're not just looking at the spike in cases, because they might be more or less each day, but the general curvature of that line. It was a friend of mine who works in a hospital down closer to Charlotte that said it was about this week that he expected, and this was 4 weeks ago he said this, about this week that he was expecting to see that peak in cases here in North Carolina. I do have an opinion on this. Remember, I'm not an expert, but the way that I've looked at this in the different readings that I have, the state has been looking at the triad area and the triangle areas, two areas that are the perfect recipe for a flare-up of the virus. The reason for this is because we have a lot of people who commute from community to community. So they might live in High Point and go to Greensboro to work, or they live in Kernersville and go into Winston-Salem, or they live in Winston-Salem and go to High Point. Right? We have a lot of people in different communities that are traveling throughout this area, and that can cause a spread. The triangle area is the same way over in Wake County. You don't see that in places, for example, like Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. A lot of people, because it's the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area, a lot of people live on the outside and they're driving in and driving back out. But it's one large community rather than people going out and about to different areas. And so that's what we're looking at. Now, a good thing to remember about the reporting of cases, remember why these restrictions were put into place and why the church also supported them at the beginning. The whole reason for the lockdowns, the restrictions, the stay-at-home orders was to flatten the curve, right? We didn't want to overwhelm the health system. It was never to get rid of the virus. That's really important to remember. It was never to get rid of the virus, because the virus is here to stay, right? We have this new coronavirus that they're still trying to figure out, and they're still trying to find even therapeutic means in order to help treat it. But it was to flatten the curve, and that is what we've done, right? There is no overwhelming of our healthcare system. There's plenty of ventilators. This is coming through nationwide, even in New York City, right? The governor of New York is now saying, we don't need the ventilators that we thought we were going to need. We weren't going to need the USS Comfort like we thought we were going to need it. We weren't, like, so all of this is helping, right? The lockdowns are helping to flatten the curve so that we don't overwhelm our healthcare system. Keep that in mind, because there's no way, whether we lock down or we don't lock down, whether we ease the restrictions or we don't ease the restrictions, the virus will continue to spread. but it will not overwhelm our healthcare system for those who need the hospital resources if they do get it, right? One thing that I want to remind you of is 1967, right? Hong Kong flu. It was a pandemic or epidemic within the United States and a pandemic within the world, many different countries in that. So 1967, so this is the H3N2, or I'm sorry, 1968. It was caused by the virus H3N2, comprised of two genes from an avian virus and a new H3 hemagglutinin, but also contained N2 from the 1957 virus, which was also another epidemic within the United States. Now notice this. In 1968, it was first noticed in the United States in September. The estimated numbers of death worldwide was 1 million in that year and about 100,000 in the United States, okay? So estimated number of death, 1 million worldwide and about 100,000 in the United States. Most excess deaths were in people 65 years or older. Now here's the kicker, right? This pandemic, right? A pandemic from 1968, it was a new flu virus. It was a new virus. They were trying to figure it out. This seasonal virus continues to circulate worldwide is the seasonal influenza A virus, right? So they didn't have the lockdown and such. Now, I know it's heresy to mention flu and COVID-19 in the same sentence. And so let me make this crystal clear. COVID-19 shows itself at this point by the data to be worse than the seasonal flu. But now they're saying it could circulate as a seasonal thing, right? But now remember that even with the influenza A and influenza B virus, it's a big guess each year because of what they call an antigenic drift, right? So there's a different mutations as an antigenic drift to be able to treat it. And so they put out the flu vaccine, which is the most likely vaccine that will be needed, right? They just make their best guess for how this antigenic drift is gonna happen. Now, we know we have therapeutic means for it. We know how to test for it. So we get testing back right away and we say, oh, we're dealing with influenza A. This is how we're going to treat it. This is how. But check out the numbers. Let's go back to 2016 and 2017. Influenza A, 2016 to 2017. So beginning from September and going all the way till about April, we're talking about the estimate of people who had it in all ages in the United States, 29.2 million. Out of that 29.2 million, 13 and a half million went for a medical visit. Nearly 500,000, this is right off the CDC.gov website, nearly 500,000 were hospitalized for it. Total deaths were just shy of 40,000. Now, here's the difference in the numbers, right? 0 to 4 years old, 126 deaths. 5 to 17, 125 deaths. 18 to 49, 1,300 deaths. 50 to 64 years old, 3,780. 65 years and older, 32,833. Right? So we're seeing that even with the yearly virus, like it's very, very deadly. It can be very deadly for those who are 65 years and older. That's because we're susceptible. Our bodies are weaker when we're older. They're already, I hate to say it, they're already beginning to show failure, right? Aches and pains and the different things that we have to start taking medication for because our bodies start slowing down. And so it's harder to fight off something like a virus, right? That's a parasite that just, well, I know it's not considered biologically a parasite, but looks for something to inhabit and will do that. And so it's good to remember, right? It's life-threatening in an older population. So we should always practice caution, whether we're dealing with the coronavirus or any other sickness, we should always practice caution around older people and being sure that we're washing our hands before our visits and we're, you know, not, we're not going around them when we're sick. But remember, The reason for the lockdown was to flatten the curve so our healthcare systems would not be overrun and overwhelmed. We've accomplished that. So do not fear when they say, well, it's going to start taking time to open things up and we'll be able to begin gathering with certain limitations again. And it's, we shouldn't say, well, there's more cases of the virus, let's go back into lockdown. That's not the point. The point was to flatten the curve, not to get rid of the virus. The virus is with us to stay, and maybe this is going to be influenza C, and we're going to be dealing with the best guess between what's going to hit us is influenza A, influenza B, influenza C, whatever it is. We've accomplished that. That is why the Sheriff's Association in North Carolina has been petitioning the governor's office to reopen churches, right, with certain limitations. Why our chanceries in Charlotte and in Raleigh for the Catholic Church have been trying to be voices in the governor's office to keep churches in mind. Right, we need to be able to go back and worship. We're going to try and do it in the safest way. But remember, if we reopen, right, you're not going to be required to go to church. You're not going to be required to go out and start working again. Right, we have to make these choices on our own, weighing benefits and risks. Right, we do this all the time. We do this on the night before Thanksgiving, which is the deadliest night of the year for accidents and lethal accidents caused by drunk drivers. Right, because it's a longer weekend and people start drinking hard on Wednesday, knowing that they can take Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. Most deadly night. I hop in my car and I say, will I risk? Right, will I be someone who's attentive and risk someone who is less intentioned on being safe behind the wheel and maybe even downright irresponsible by drinking and driving? Will I take this risk in order to drive to my parents' house or to drive to my brother's house so that I can stay the night and help them with Thanksgiving meal the next day? We all make these assessments, right? And I know that people will disagree. I know that people are scared. I know that there's still a lot of anxiety. And that's okay. It's okay to feel all that because it's like we're in one big pressure cooker now with these restrictions. But the important thing is to recognize we've accomplished what we're to accomplish. We can't change the mindset now and say, okay, it was to flatten the curve. Now we have to stay locked down until the virus stops spreading. If we did that with the flu, right? If we did that with the flu and said, we're going to wait 14 days, we're not going to lift the restrictions, and we're not going to go back to church, and we're not going to go back to school and things. If we have 14 days where there's not one flu death in the United States or in a community, right? Let's say the United States, there's not one death due to the flu for 14 days, we would have been in lockdown for 6 years, right? Because every week someone dies due to a flu complication. Many times it's in older people, right? We see it right in the numbers from 2016, 2017, and then also as we look 2017 and 2018. Similar numbers, it skyrockets when we go up to 65 age and up. The deaths skyrocket. We have up to 64 years, we're only dealing with 6, 7, 8, 9, right under 10,000. As soon as we hit 65 plus years and up in the United States, we're looking at 51,000 people, right? So out of 61,000 deaths, 51,000 are from people who are 65 years or older. And so we're not going to get rid of the virus by lockdown. We're not going to get rid of the virus, right? The only way to get rid of something is by finding a vaccine, but we can't wait to that point. And so that's why we're going to start taking these precautions at the parish, and start looking for the ways that we can get you back to church for those who are willing to take those risks and who are attentive and able to follow those safety precautions. Again, we're gonna have some older people in the parish who feel healthy enough and they're willing to take the risk. I'm not gonna turn them away. We're not gonna judge them. We're gonna say, great. You know, at their age, they say, you know what? I know the risks. And I know the rewards, and I'm willing to take this risk in order to go to Mass and to attend at Mass. Other people are going to say, no, right now, I'm not willing to take that risk. I'm going to wait until phase 3 or phase 4 or until there's some other way to treat it. I know this has kind of been long, it's been rambling, but I wanted to give you some of my own thoughts. I think that that the media, of course, has hyped this a lot, and looking at the numbers and looking at what's expected of us and where we're moving, it takes more of a common sense approach in looking at the ways in which the realities. We've accomplished what we were going to with the lockdown orders, and we were and we're ready to start opening things back up, and we're going to do everything that we can at the parish to facilitate that, so that people know that we're doing everything they can that we can to keep them safe. Long rambling video cast and podcast for Friday. You can call it Friday Fury with Father if you want, or Friday Fussing, as I kind of just needed to get that out there. Also, a big shout out to a friend of mine, Jason, who's in Concord, North Carolina. He used to podcast and video cast before he got married. He had a lot of extra equipment, so shout out to him. He said, if you can pay for shipping, I'll send you my old microphone. You can probably tell there's a big quality difference when it comes to the audio, so I'm very grateful that he got this, that he sent me this professional microphone that's been collecting dust for a couple years, and it was pretty much just a donation to help here at the parish. Have a great weekend. Get outside and enjoy the sun. It's going to be a beautiful weekend, and we're going to be live streaming the Mass on Sunday morning, 8 a.m. in Spanish for our Spanish community, and we'll be continuing to communicate with all of our families about what it's going to look like when we can start welcoming them back to the church en masse.